Hey guys, Melissa here. I blog at our family website, www.thecorkums.com, which we affectionately call the Corkboard. This is the Uncorked Podcast. If I had to choose a descriptor for our family, it would be outside the box. Whether it's adopting three unrelated adolescents out of birth order, or trying to run a coffee shop in our quote-unquote spare time right after adopting, we love adventure. We had to give up that coffee shop, and our three oldest kids are launched for now. But with lots of extended family living at home and a full-time wellness business, there still aren't many dull moments. We've met so many amazing people with fascinating stories along our journey. I'd love to introduce them to you. Welcome to episode 2. I intersected with this week's guest, Bethany, at a homeschool community we were both a part of. I was always intrigued with her stories from their family's time in Poland and her ability to instill the love of writing into tweens. Since we recorded, I did get a chance to finish her recently published Strains of Silence novel. It's total awesome sauce. Besides being well written, it brings to light some really important issues around domestic violence that need to stay a part of our cultural conversation. Bethany gets a chance to really share her heart on this, so let's get started.
All right. Well, Bethany, welcome to the Uncorked Podcast. I chose you because besides the fact that you're marketing a great new book, you just have a lot of great stories to tell, and you've been places and lived places that not everyone has had a chance to do. So welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I have a true confession. I really wanted to finish your new book before we recorded today, and I haven't quite made it through, but I'm superbly enjoying it. So we'll get to your book in a little bit.
Okay.
But first, introduce yourself to our audience. Tell us a little bit about who makes up your family.
Okay. My husband Rob and I have been married for 19 years, and we have kids from almost 18 down to 3, and we have lived in Europe, and we have moved a lot. We're very good at moving, but we're glad to be settling in here. We hope that we just moved from Maryland to Wisconsin, and Maryland was where I met you, but this move to Wisconsin has been a great thing for our family, and we're excited to be here, and we're hoping that this is our last move besides. You know, I'm sure that our kids will begin exploring the world as they take off from us, and we'll get to still visit and travel exciting places because we're not the kind of people who just sit, but we're also glad to be putting down some roots here. So,
well, that's fun. So what took you from Maryland to Wisconsin? What makes you think that this will be a place where you can root?
Well, so I have kind of just been on pilgrimage my whole life. When I was born, I was born in South Carolina, but my dad was a pastor and shortly after that became a church planter. So I was 15 months old, I think, when we moved to upstate New York, and then we moved to Virginia and then Pennsylvania and then back down to South Carolina. So I've done a lot of the East Coast. And I met Rob in college, and when we got married, we felt very clearly a call to missions. So we knew that we wouldn't be staying in America long. And so we've just kind of always been moving and doing. And the Lord used our third little one to bring us back from the international mission field back to the States. But we have never really quit being missionaries. We have felt like, you know, the world is coming to us here and in the States, and it's good to be reaching out and being people who want to share Christ wherever we are and communicate the love of Christ well. But we kind of settled when we came back from the mission field a little bit north of Baltimore, and were there for 9 years, and it was wonderful. We loved it. We loved our church family there. We loved the area. And we even there were feeling like, okay, we want to put down some roots so that this can be a launching place for us and that we can use what we have learned on the mission field and our experiences to inspire others to go, so that it was more less just us going and us being used to encourage other people to see their place in the world instead of just to see nearsightedly. But we got really, really busy there between Rob's ministry there and all of the things that I was needing to do there. We got to the point where it was pretty unsustainable what we were doing, the way that we were living, just going too much. We're not slow people, but we are, you know, I was working until 2 o'clock in the morning every night. I homeschooled, and then I would spend time teaching and lesson preparation and then writing and editing, and I was editing nearly full time. So it was just constant, and Rob's ministry was also pretty constant, and he just kept feeling the Lord pressing on him to be a lead pastor somewhere. We loved our pastor there in Maryland, so this was not a reflection of him or of that church at all, but it was just the Lord saying, I've been building this into you all along, and it's time. And we fought it for a long time because we liked the idea of putting roots down and having a place for our kids to grow up that they could influence from, but we just felt like, I think I was reading Present Over Perfect by Shauna Nyquist, and it was talking about not having to prove yourself and not be constantly going. And she was talking about not just rest, but being in a place of wholeness. And so for me, I think it was the desire to slow my pace and knowing that I wasn't going to be able to just cut back on things as they were because we were so rooted in there with our connections and everything and expectations that it needed to be kind of a replant of our family for us to really genuinely be able to slow down. And Rob was looking for a place that he felt like the Lord was calling him to lead. So after a lot of prayer and a lot of searching, we were kind of looking toward the Midwest because that would move us closer to his family. And I said, you know, anywhere within 5 to 7 hours of them is good, but I want it north because living in Poland and Lithuania, I fell in love with the cold. And so I didn't want to move 7 hours south of them. I said, we'll just draw that circle around your parents and then look only in the northern half. And so we prayed. And I found the job listing on the Gospel Coalition website, and we just got super excited about it and contacted them. And it was a long process, and it was not the first church that we looked at in this area. We had been in touch with 4 or 5, but this one just always felt like yes. And we just kept being excited and trying to talk ourselves down. Maybe it's not. Maybe we just need to be calm about it. But both of us were just super excited to get here, and it has been a really good move for our family. It suits us here, and the ministry. I just see Rob flourishing in it. He loves the team that he leads the church with. He loves being the one to teach and decide on a sermon series and prayerfully just lead this body, this community. They're great people, and I'm enjoying more time. It's a very small community up here, so our kids are plugging into the public school system, and so I'm going to be involved in meeting other families that way. That's new for me, and that's honestly probably the most daunting thing here for me, is just letting go since I've been a homeschool mom all this time. And so I'm going to be a super invested mom while my kids are there, looking for ways to get involved. But I think that'll be great for us to meet community people that way. And all the kids are excited about it. They really are. We went and visited, and, you know, they toured the schools, and they all got really excited about it. So I think that'll be great. I love the cool weather. We're able to be much more often out and around and hanging out outside and talking with neighbors. And so it's just it just already feels like home, and we love that.
That's so fun. So how old is your oldest? Will Caleb go to school, or is he finished?
Funny story about Caleb. He only had a credit and a half to finish. And so he was thinking of probably just finishing that at home and finding work. But the work he really, really wants to do is illustrations and book trailers. He has gone to several writers' conferences with me, and he loves the graphics side of it, doing book covers and business cards and that kind of thing. He's very interested in that and wants to build a portfolio and use the connections that he's made and do a lot of – he still thinks like a homeschooler. So he's thinking, I don't need a 4-year degree to teach me art. I can learn a ton of stuff online and I can apprentice as long as I really build a portfolio and use the network that I have. And I said, that's great, that's wonderful, and it's true, but there's no money in it initially. And he knows that. So he was looking for something to do. He wants a trade. He wants to do something with his hands or something that he will enjoy doing that will feel like a hard day's work, that when it's done, it's done. And he can come home or wherever he lives at that point and pursue what he really loves and what he really wants to do as a hobby until his portfolio is built and until it pays enough for it to stop being a hobby and be his main thing. So we were looking at the school options around here, and he wasn't quite sure whether it would be more woodworking or metals or what kind of thing was going to be most interesting to him. And then when he went on a tour of the high school for Kate with me, he came up to do some house hunting with me, and we were kind of looking for Kate. And he realized that he can choose. He can say, okay, I'm going to try metals and go to the community college and learn how to do that and pay for that. Or at the high school, they offer intros to all of that stuff. He can take intro to wood and intro to metals, intro to shop, several other things. And then once he figures out what he is really interested in, then just invest in learning the one and getting licensed in the one that really interests him. So he said, I think I just want to do my senior year here so I can finish that course and a half, and then the rest of my day I'm just going to fill up with electives. So he's got a bunch of art classes plus woodworking and metals and a couple other things, and he's pretty excited about it. It seems like a very low-key year for him, but he's going to get to try lots of different things for free. So I said, I'm a fan of you trying them all for free and then deciding what you like. I think that'll be a wiser way to do it. So he's got a good head on his shoulders. He just really wants to pursue the illustration and the graphics.
Wow, win for Caleb. Way to go. Yeah. That is a great story. I love that he'll get to try all that stuff for free. That's phenomenal. And I love how you say he's still thinking like a homeschooler, because PJ actually decided to try high school out this year. He'll be going in as a freshman, but even just sitting in the guidance counselor's office actually today and picking classes, I can already feel the tension between what his paradigm is and how he sees education and how he's schooled himself for a lot of things and how the guidance counselor sees, I think, more typical kids coming into high school. And not that it was a bad thing. It was just kind of an interesting dynamic as she kind of talked him through which classes that he wanted and kind of asked where his strengths and weaknesses were. And I could feel the tension between, you know, what his education experience has been and what other people's has been and how she interacted with him and expected him to answer questions. It was just really fascinating. So it's a total crapshoot. We've talked about it as a family. We can kind of see this going either way. Like either it'll be a phenomenal experience or it'll just be a struggle because his paradigm's so different. So we're kind of curious to see how it all goes.
Well, we told Caleb, he still very much thinks with the classical method. It was what we used in most of his upper-level years, and he just thinks that way. If I want to learn it, I can. I just find the information, and I train myself, and he's good at that. He's bright and quick, and so he's just, I think he's thinking of this year kind of as a sampler, and I'm glad for that for him. I saw the same thing you're talking about with Kate, and I think she'll do well with it, but she definitely was having some interesting discussions with the guidance counselor, too. But Caleb finished his schedule and just kind of slid it across the table, and she said, well, that's a dream schedule. And he said, I know. I'm really looking forward to it. So.
Yeah. Well, it's great when you only have a credit and a half to finish. Like, that you know, you only have so many things to do.
Yeah.
I'm sure Kate has a lot more to kind of pick up that's required, and PJ obviously is starting with a clean slate. But yeah. I think at home the biggest thing to watch for our family will be, we've homeschooled classically a lot too, but there's also been this kind of Thomas Jefferson kind of student-led, as he gets older, you know, there's been a lot of leeway, a lot of autonomy in what he's done, and so really excited to kind of watch it play out to see how he responds to assignments that he sees as not as valuable or busy work, which are bound to happen in a classroom setting. It's just the way it goes, and he knows that, so we're not obviously not going in blind, but it'll be interesting to see the adjustment to, I can kind of learn how I want to and prove that I've learned it in a way that is efficient and a good use of my time versus I'm going to do it the way that someone's telling me how to do it. And of course, there's so many other benefits. He's really looking forward to a bigger pool of social opportunities and the accountability of the classroom, because he actually is a horrible homeschool student once he hit puberty because he's just not as motivated. And so I think he knows he needs the accountability, so it'll be really good. But definitely, yeah,
definitely
a big paradigm switch.
Character development there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the accountability is going to be good, too, on all sides. So.
Yeah. We are really excited. So, well, talking about passions and other things, talk to me about writing. Have you always been a writer? Did that start as a little kid? You can remember, you know, you were writing stories while everyone else was playing with dolls, or
yes.
How did that all come about?
Yes, I wrote stories and plays. I've always been an avid reader, and I just kind of wanted to add my voice to that. I kind of journaled, and I dreamed of things. I didn't really think that I had a shot at anything. It was just for me, always, until after college. I loved English. I loved literature. That was still always my passion, and I was an English teacher and a reading teacher in middle school and high school. But it was my particular story, the novel that has just come out, was something that I just felt needed to be said. I had a string of rough relationships in college. I wasn't homeschooled, but I was, and I wouldn't say I was sheltered either, but I definitely grew up in the church culture, and I was protected. But I started college at 16. And I think that just had to do more with a move from Pennsylvania to South Carolina than anything else. With my high school credits and the different standards, I kind of got to South Carolina, and they didn't know what to do with me. And they said, well, you can just have a diploma. And my mom said, no, she can't. She's 15. So my senior year was also a bunch of electives. So I started college just young and naive and got involved in some relationships that were not great, and a couple were extremely unhealthy. And from there, you know, I got out of those relationships and was determined to just kind of follow the Lord alone and do the mission field. And my best friend at the time was Rob, and he also felt led to missions. I wasn't convinced that we were going to do that together, but it took me a while, and the Lord just kind of moved us in that direction and continued drawing our paths closer together. So anyway, we did the mission field, and then we came back, and I was journaling there. I was writing about my mission experiences. And when we got back, I was volunteering at a pregnancy resource center. You know, I would give pregnancy tests to girls that would come in, and those who tested positive, just counsel them and teach them how to parent if they wanted to do that, you know, just to say, I'll be a support for you. We at the center here will be a support for you if you choose to have this baby and raise this baby and love this baby, and you don't have to do this on your own, even if you feel like you do. So we, just for taking parenting classes, you know, they'd come in and do basic first aid or basic feeding, how to do this kind of thing, or how to bathe and change diapers, little things that, you know, if their mom wasn't involved in their life, showing them this is how you do this, there's no other way for them to learn this thing. So they really do feel out of their league and panicked, a lot of these girls in the situation. And so I was just being a peer counselor and teaching that. And for each class they came in for, they could earn clothes and diapers and formula and that kind of stuff to help just provide for their baby. But my heart just kept going out to the girls who they'd come in for pregnancy tests and be negative. And there was immense relief. And then I'd see them a month later for the same thing, and a month later for the same thing. And I just kept thinking, this relationship you're in is a wreck. And they were scared, and they didn't know. And I just wanted to speak to that. You know, I wanted to speak to the girls who were in these cycles of relationships where they're doing and saying things that they're not happy with, they're not comfortable with, but they're scared to get out of. Some of them were being abused. Sometimes we had to make some hard calls for them and get them to safety. But I just felt like I learned so much from the healing that Christ did in my life after my broken relationships. I learned what healthy love was, but it took a long time. And Rob is not the one who fixed me. Jesus did, and that whole process of healing that I had to go through, that's what I wanted to offer the girls. And I did not want to say, I just felt like there were movies, there were books, there were all these romances that they would just get so swept up in, where the right guy fixes the girl. If for the right guy, anything can happen, and she can be whole again. And I just thought, no, that's not what fixes this. And you're worth more than this, and you're believing lies about yourself that are causing you to settle for things that you shouldn't settle for. And so that's why I wrote this one. And writing it, it is absolutely a work of fiction, but because a lot of the lessons I learned from my past are in it, I really had to kind of go back and revisit those things. And it was like healing all over again. You know, it would open things that I hadn't thought about in a while and allow me to walk through them again and feel them again so that I could get that heart on the page and opportunities to forgive again and opportunities to just thank the Lord for getting me out of some of those situations I was in again. So my heart is all over that book in so many of the conversations and so many of the things, my questions and my doubts and the lies that I was believing about myself. So it took a long time to write it. It took even longer to get it ready to be published. It's been a very long journey, but it was something that I was absolutely committed to. And I fell in love with the writing process because of this story. So I loved writing before, but I was nowhere near someone who could have been published. You know, I was just kind of writing for myself. But this book changed everything for me and made me want to write more. So I had to kind of really become disciplined in my writing schedule and in what I'm willing to do to continue writing.
Yeah, because it's like a job. It's like a real full-time job. Like, you have to schedule yourself to do it, to produce it. It's like, whereas when you're writing for yourself, it kind of happens when it happens, or you can use it as therapy or, you know, catharsis. But I have heard that from other writers, even other people who even just write blogs professionally where it's their life. Like, it's not just something that happens like when you get around to it. You don't just, you know, take some pictures here and there and do it. Like, it's legit. Like, people, you know, write months out and at a time, or, you know, really, really, there's so much more thought that goes into it than I think is apparent when you're the reader taking it in, because it comes across, it's so easy to read sometimes, you know, and you can read a book in a day or two. I think sometimes we miss all that blood, sweat, and tears that is behind that process.
Yeah. You know, people say, I read your book straight through. I just couldn't stop. I stayed up late tonight. And I love hearing that. And I think it took me 7 years to get that thing ready to be published. It was not an easy thing. And that one was so much of me. There's so much of me in that book. I knew where I wanted the story to go. I knew what the message was that I wanted to say. And I loved coming up with the characters and doing all of that. So that aspect of it was fun for me. But the book that I have just finished is completely different and was a completely different process because of that. Where the first one, I wrote and told the story and I knew basically where it was going. This other one, I had to plot it out much more and say, okay, this is where it's going. This is what needs to happen. What are the scenes I need to have? Who are the players, when and where, and get it written. And then I had to plan time. Like, I had to do minimum a chapter a week. If you can just get yourself to write a good, solid chapter a week, in less than a year, you'll have a novel-length work. You know, you just have to keep doing that. That worked for me because I don't, I'm disciplined, but I don't want my family to all fall under my schedule and my deadlines. So I can make, each week, I can make a plan to get a chapter done. There were times that I would say, okay, I need to get through 15,000 words this week, so that's going to end up being more 5 or 6 chapters. And so those took time out where I would have to sit, and just because of a deadline or because I knew the next week a couple of things were going to be impossible, just family schedules. But if I don't plan for those and put my butt in the chair and sit down and make myself write, whether I feel like writing or not, it's not going to get done. So it's just, it's a level of commitment and forming a habit that's really important to the process.
What's your favorite way to be inspired, or do you have a special writing chair or spot that you write best in?
Okay, well, we have a new house, so I'm trying to get into my new groove here. I had a great writing spot when we lived in Maryland. Here I have the potential for one, but I like to go on walks and think about things. But my favorite way, honestly, to get inspired is to talk with my husband and my family. This second book that I wrote is so vastly different from Strains of Silence. It's a folk tale, fairy tale, mythology mashup. It was just born out of a fun brainstorming conversation one night at dinner. You know, we were talking about what if Pan were the bad guy and Hook were the good guy. And when we called him Pan, I was like, oh, yeah, what if he were the goat god from mythology, the demigod? And we talked about his pipes and the lost boys. And I said, ooh, what if he was the one who stole all the lost children from Hamelin? What if he was the Pied Piper? And so it just kind of all turned into this. When I did a little bit more research on the Pied Piper, I found that the story goes that there were three boys that were left behind. One was lame and couldn't follow. One was blind and tripped and couldn't find his way. And then the third was deaf, and he couldn't hear the music of the pipes. And so that boy, the deaf boy, is the hero of my story. And he feels his little sister move in the night and follows her to protect her. So all the children of Hamelin get taken by the Pied Piper, and they go to Neverland, and he has to fight to rescue her. And his Hook is a shepherd's crook. He's a sheep herder, and he just goes with his hook and follows her and has to fight the demigod to save her and all the children of Hamelin. So it was just a fun dinner table conversation and completely different than the book I had written before, but a fascinating project. I really, really enjoyed it. I love to read speculative fiction. That's one of my favorites to read. My kids and I have always been into that. It was fun to write.
That's so cool. I don't think I've ever heard that before. Speculative fiction, and I can imagine what that is, and I think I've probably read it before, but I've never heard it named that before, so you've taught me something new, and I think that's probably would be a family favorite of ours for sure. We're the family that likes to make up the stories on road trips, you know, where everyone gets a sentence and we go around and around and make ridiculous things. Going back to Strains of Silence just for a sec, did you have an intended audience, like age? You know, is this something you've talked about with your daughter, with Kate? And, you know, what was your dream vision for who would read this? And I don't know.
Well, so I was thinking of the girls that I worked with in the center. So they were older teens, high schoolers, or early college, some of them the age that they would have been in college if they had gone. But that kind of new adult age. And that's actually one of the things that made it really difficult to find a publisher, because though new adult fiction in the general market flies off the shelves, you know, they have a new adult section, and it's about college-age characters and or early career, but these people, they're just newly independent, 20-somethings, and there's a whole lot of smut in the books. Basically, you know, their new independence just leads to all these kind of things I didn't want my daughter reading. And the thing that was breaking my heart was that there are so many books about partner abuse and domestic violence in the new adult genre, but they do all basically, the point is that the right guy can fix you, or you just need to be whole enough to have a healthy sexual relationship with someone else. And they miss the whole, the best kind of love is a self-sacrificing, unconditional love that is for building the other person up, and that mutual thing. So I just was disheartened by that. But as far as inspirational fiction goes, and in Christian bookstores, there aren't shelves for it. It was a literal lack of shelf space. The people said we wouldn't know how to market this because it's too clean, it's too Christian to go in just the new adult genre, but it's edgier and deals with issues that a lot of people don't want to read in their inspirational fiction. It is not a it's not a Sunday school story. It's about broken people and consequences and what healing really takes, and what it's something that I think ought to be talked about much more. I think there's much more abuse and emotional abuse and verbal abuse and other things happening in even in church circles than we want to talk about. But so it's definitely, the characters are in college. And my intended audience, I think, was older high school and college. But there's nothing gratuitous in there. There's nothing that I feel like I would warn. It's just issues heavy in the sense that you wouldn't want to just hand it to a 14-year-old if you're not going to follow up with a conversation with that 14-year-old. You know, you need to be read it to and talk with your daughters about it. That's what I would say, especially like to the homeschool community. I think I did let my daughter read it. She's 14, and we had great conversations following it, excellent conversations that we needed to have that might have been difficult to bring up another way, but I felt comfortable with that. I know everybody needs to make their own decisions about that, but I have also heard from people who are not my target audience, but are older, that have experienced things like my main character experiences and have just never really healed. They've just kind of stuffed it down and pretended everything was okay and gone on with life. And they have said that the book allowed them the opportunity to heal. It brought things to their mind that they needed to deal with, and it showed them how to deal with them. And so I've heard a lot of older women say that it would be a great book club book to read and talk about. And there are, on the publisher's website, some questions for discussion if it's used as a book club. And those will be on my site, too. They're not yet, but I'm going to post them there. And I am absolutely willing I'm going to do at some point, if it's getting used with book clubs enough, I would love to just Skype in or something and participate in a discussion. I'm happy to be available for that.
Yeah, that was one of my questions. I think it's a great topic and a great book club discussion or other group discussion. And I think it's a book that could create a lot of community because, like you said, there's not a genre for it. But I think even though there's not a literature genre for it, there's a huge, huge gaping hole in our culture for it. I think it's going to connect with a ton of women and a ton of stories. And I can see the women who read it and who relate to it coming together around it and in a community, you know. And this is where I know social media kind of has that, we all have a love-hate relationship with it, but I could totally see social media being a venue where people who have read it from all different geographic areas are able to connect and say,
yeah,
I get it, I've been there, and these are the lessons that I've been challenged with and that I've learned, and either through your book or through other, you know, different experiences. And I love that idea.
We need to talk about that emotional abuse more. We need to talk about the fact that there's healing after, you know, I'm trying to not give spoilers, but I need to say at one point in the story, so Kasia, the main character, remembers that she has been raped and that she has just suppressed that. And she just says, oh, God, it was so much easier when I was numb, when I didn't have to think about that, I didn't have to deal with that, and I don't want to think about it. The guy, her friend Zan, says, you know, you can limp through the rest of life numb, that's fine, but you deserve to heal and to be able to dance again and to be able to emotionally be completely whole. And I think that's where a lot of people are. You know, women just, they don't want to deal with bad relationships or bad, some of them may be bad choices, but maybe they're victims of sexual abuse. Maybe they're victims of domestic violence. Maybe there were terrible relationships. And, you know, when I was in some of my unhealthy relationships, I didn't realize how unhealthy they were until I got out of them. And until I had a healthy relationship to compare them to. I just thought, well, this is how girls get treated. This is normal. And it's time for us to say, you know, no, that's not normal, and it's not okay to be belittling and domineering, and we're supposed to be in relationships that build us up and that are healthy for us. And I think it took a while for me to realize that some of my relationships were not healthy at all. So I think the more we talk about it and the more we say, whether you would feel comfortable labeling that as rape, whether you would feel comfortable as labeling that as abuse, you have been a victim of this, and you need to be able to find healing in it. So often, as girls are treated like this, look at the Taylor Swift thing, you know, just the fact that she thanked the guy and his wife for having her picture taken with them and was disgusted with the fact that she said thank you after that, after he groped her. But I think there's just this, we need to start being comfortable talking about what's okay in a relationship and what's not, standing up for ourselves and not being mistreated, and finding healing for that, because so many times we just kind of accept it and begin to believe less of ourselves. And so there's healing in talking about things. The real healing comes from forgiveness. And I'm not saying what you did to me was okay, but saying I'm not going to carry that. I'm forgiving you so that I'm free of you. I'm letting go of this and I'm walking away. And I think that's what's important. Just as I follow Christ, I'm going to forgive you for this and move on. And I had to, there was just a lot that I had to forgive as I walked through that process myself. Some of it was really hard to forgive, and I wrestled with, by forgiving, am I saying this is okay? Because that's not all right. It's not okay to be treated this way, and it's not okay for you to do this to others. And that's one of the things, just in our family, we make sure that when someone says we're sorry for something, the other person does not say back, that's okay. Because I want my kids to know that mistreating other people is not ever okay. And that's not what we're saying to someone when they apologize. We're saying, I forgive you. And I forgive you is something that we're doing. It's an active thing from us. So honestly, we can forgive whether the other person is sorry or not. We can say, I am actively going to forgive you for Christ, for me. And if there's reconciliation there, that's great. But there won't always be reconciliation. Sometimes we just need to be able to let it go ourselves and move on.
That's such good stuff. And you say it's not a Sunday school story, and I've seen you, you know, post on social media the same thing, but I wish that Sunday school could be more real, more authentic, more intentional. And so I would hope that this is the type of story and the type of conversation that our churches and our Sunday schools would be gravitating towards. I think it's really important. And I wonder, and this is probably a can of worms, but how much to the Christian culture and the evangelical church's culture of male-led households, and I feel really strongly about male leadership, but I think there's a really fine line, and I think a lot of times if we've grown up in the Christian bubble, it makes us really vulnerable to being able to explain away and justify when we're being mistreated in the name of something that wasn't meant to be that way at all. Do you feel like that contributed to how you ended up in some of your relationships and why maybe it took some time to understand that that wasn't how you were meant to be treated? And
yeah, for sure. Because of the word submission, I think. I think so many women think that that means just doing whatever you're told, and so many men think that means you do whatever I say. And a lot of that is kind of perpetrated in the name of Christ. This is how I'm going to run my household. This is what I'm going to do. And I don't think that that's what the Bible is talking about. I think Ephesians 5 makes it pretty clear that men are to love their wives and lead their wives as Christ loved the church, which is laying themselves down, for laying down their lives for them, which is care and keeping of them and being concerned for them. And we are to respect our husbands, but I think it's easy to respect a man that is leading in the way men are supposed to lead, which is neither domineering nor passive. You know, it's a gentle strength. I think it's the meekness and the strength that Christ demonstrated. And I find it very easy to submit to my husband because I trust him completely, but also I know that he's just a man, and ultimately he's accountable for what he does and how he leads our family. I think in a lot of church circles, though, it's very difficult for women to say, I've been abused, or there's emotional or verbal abuse going on in our homes. I think they feel like it's dangerous to bring up because they'll be judged for being a cantankerous wife or not respecting their husbands. I think that's where other men in the church need to, you know, get that brother in line, get him into place. I think the men who are leading well need to hold other men accountable who are either passive and not leading their families with passion and love and gentle guidance, or the ones who are domineering. I think that's really important, and I think that there has been this kind of, especially in some church cultures, and sadly, in a lot of the homeschool communities, there is that male leadership that is not healthy and not biblical that's happening, and that's kind of being. I think it's slowly getting better. I think people are talking about it, but I think we need to talk about it more. But I agree with you. I love my husband leading. I feel strongly about male leadership, male headship, but I also feel like they're supposed to be, you know, they're following Christ's example and their leadership. And that's good to follow, not to just put up with abuse for the sake of he's your husband, so just be quiet and submissive and deal with that. That's not supposed to be happening. And men need to be called on that, and women need to support one another in that. There needs to be we need to be quick to listen and slow to judge, and make sure that in those situations, first make sure the woman and the children are safe, and then talk through situations. But if someone says, you know, this is happening at home, it needs to be safe to say that. It needs to be safe to come into a church situation, into a church community, and say, we're not okay. We're struggling with this. I think for too long there's been such an emphasis on, for the sake of joy, for the sake of we're here together to worship in joy, that we all have to look happy. And there's not been really an atmosphere or community of we're all broken, we're all recovering, we're all healing as we follow Christ. And the sanctification is a process. And we need to link arms and pull one another along. I think that's Galatians 6, bearing one another's burdens and just walking forward and growing toward Christ together. I think that's important. But for a long time, it's just been hard to speak up. I grew up as I'm a pastor's daughter. That's one of the things that I wanted to make sure that I built into Kasha, dealing with the pressure to make sure that my poor choices didn't affect my dad's ministry, that, you know, I was worried about, there was my reputation and my testimony too, but that wasn't the only thing on my shoulders. There were other people who would be affected when I started talking about some of the relationships I'd been in and some of the choices I'd made and the consequences, and I needed to be careful about that for others. And so it didn't feel safe to talk. And that's one of the things. I just feel like if we're cultivating a community where people are allowed to be broken, we're allowed to struggle, we're allowed to be depressed or have doubts, we're allowed to talk about those things, and those of us who are growing and are strong and are doing well can edify and build up the others that are struggling and encourage them and pull them along, walk alongside them, the rejoicing with those who are rejoicing, weeping with those who are weeping. I think that's really an important part of what ought to be the church culture. And I see that in many churches. I see more of it And I love that. I'm excited about that. But I also still see pockets of places where people are not comfortable talking about it. And unfortunately, I think there's one of the reasons that I think it's important for books like mine to get out there. And I'm not saying this because I want book sales. I'm saying this because it is an honest book. I think there's a lot of Christian fiction that is just sweet and is just good things happen and people struggle, but they pray through it and everything works out fine in the end. And there's not a lot of brokenness in them, and that sells to a lot of people, and that's great. And there's no problem with that type of fiction. I have no problem with that. I know that that's meeting the desires of a large target audience. But I think there's also a lot of people who want to be reading about Christ working in people in very real struggles too. And I think that we need to be honest about it wherever we are. And I think literature is a part of that. So I think it's being marketed as Christian contemporary fiction. It's just contemporary fiction, which doesn't have kind of an age limit on it. But it's unusual in that it's college students. So I hope that, you know, college students and 20-somethings and older teens will read it. They're definitely the target audience because they can spot a facade a mile away. You know, they want real. They want gritty, not gratuitous stuff, but, you know, there needs to be something written that they're wanting to read. And so that was the group I was writing to.
They're definitely the generation of authenticity, and I think that's good. I think they've been challenging other generations, and I love it. I have a kind of random question. Will it ever be turned into an audiobook? Because there's so much Polish in it, and I would love to hear it read and pronounced the way that you hear it from your time in Poland. Do you think you'll ever have it produced as an audiobook?
I don't know how all that works. Honestly, my question is, I don't know who has the rights to do that, because Harbor Light owns it as the publisher. So I think they have the rights to do that. I'm pretty sure that was in the contract. So that might not be something I can do. I would love that. And you're not the first person that has asked about that. And a couple of the reviews loved the book but said there was a little bit too much Polish in there because they wished that they had a glossary, which I completely understand since I don't speak the language. But also, I think as soon as I put a glossary in, they would be laughing and feeling like, oh, that's what that... Because normally, like, if someone said, dziękuję, then the next line is, you're welcome. So it's clear that the person was saying, thank you. Or I'd put, in Kasia's thought process, her next line would basically translate what was saying there. She would kind of repeat it. So people would see that that's really in there. There's a translation somewhere on the page for everything that's talked about. But you don't get to hear it, and that is sad, because it's such a cool-sounding language.
Yeah, I can say as someone who's read more than half that the translation is there. It doesn't draw away from your understanding and the flow of the book, but I think it would be a phenomenal read aloud, if that's a real literary word and not just a homeschool word, but because of the language. And so maybe you can put a bug in your publisher's ear that we would love an audiobook.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, talk to your agent. I love that you have an agent. That's so
Me too.
Real and cool and fabulous. I'm so happy for you. Thanks so much for coming and sharing about your book. I just think it is a message that people need to hear, and I'm grateful that you were able to, in hindsight, relive that enough to communicate it in a really powerful work of fiction. So on behalf of all of us who are really benefiting from your labor of love, thank you. And thanks for hanging out with me while you have guests in your house and kind of during a crazy night for you guys. So I appreciate that. And I know your life is super busy, and I appreciate the time that you chose to spend with me.
Thank you. It was good talking to you.
So, what did you think? While Bethany was talking, I kept thinking of women in my life who needed to be encouraged by Bethany's strength and bravery, or who will be excited to help Bethany get her message out because they've walked similar roads. If you're thinking like me, be sure to share the podcast or her book with those folks on your mind. A link to the book, as well as a way to connect with Bethany if you want her to come visit with your book club, are on the show notes page at www.thecorkums.com. I'm also adding her book to our daughter's reading list for this year. I think it will be a great springboard for conversation about red flags in dating relationships and how to make smarter choices with boys. As always, I value your input, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Remember, I'm the novice here. You can find me on Instagram at macorkum or Twitter at corkboardblog. Be sure to tag your feedback with hashtag #TheUncorkedPodcast. I changed it up a little from last week, but that will be the hashtag moving forward. So that's hashtag #TheUncorkedPodcast. Thanks for listening.